You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
All right, let's go. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com, Seattle Sports app, and wherever you find your podcast. I don't care where it is. Just find it. For God's sakes, stop messing around. Find us. Download it or subscribe to it or follow it, whatever it is you have to do so that, you know, you listen every day.
Guess who I found?
You found Maura?
I found Maura.
Oh, thank God.
I'm back.
Maura, you're back. You missed so much.
I felt like it.
Maura, you missed a lot.
I was like literally driving around Boston in the car with my dad and my brother on Twitter going, oh my gosh, look at this Mariners brawl.
Oh, I thought that people on Twitter were going to be telling you all about the things Justin and I did while you were gone.
Yeah, I did get tipped off. Yeah. Someone.
What'd you hear about?
Someone said, you got to get back now. They said you were a little out of control with like the music side of
music
of ranked things.
Well, maybe a little
you were
bit.
Turning it into a rock show, basically.
Well, actually, we specifically did that. I don't know whether you heard. I had lunch with Groz last week, and he and I were talking about, being a radio DJ, etc. And so I was telling him about how that was really all I ever wanted to do was be a radio rock DJ, not do this stupid show. And so, Justin let me do it since you weren't here.
Justin
let me do it. I felt like maybe you'd want to hear it now that you're back.
It was good.
Oh, is it just Freebird?
Everybody loves Freebird, and that was Leonard Skinner, named after, of course, their high school gym teacher. Tough transition whenever you're going to go from Skinner to the 90s. Pearl Jam kind of blew a lot of that music right out of the water. But I know you know Jeremy, and you're going to listen to it and like it right now. It's King Mike on Banana 101.5. You know, this is Flint's Real Rock.
Oh, no.
Oh! Nailed the post there.
You guys had to do the throwback to your whole Banana thing,
yes.
Too.
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, I needed a radio station, and so Banana 101.5, The Real Rock.
Needed
is
a radio name, King Mike.
Where we end up.
Oh, wow.
What do you think? Missed calling or one time only? Is that something you think we could do weekly on the show?
the silence is deafening.
Yeah, all right. Well, I just wanted to see. Yeah. All right. It was funny, Justin. I was trying to find that, and I was like looking through all of the sound we've rolled in the last week since Maura's been gone.
Yeah.
We've rolled in a lot of terrible things. Like, Maura, I'm really.
Yeah,
I'm
no, really I can see.
Sorry you missed so much of this. You missed the Iron Sheik. You missed Iron Man. You missed Ranking Kings and Gooses. You really missed a lot. So, yeah. Nice to have you back.
Phils.
Yeah, Phils, Gooses, Kings. It's been Iron. It's been quite a week.
Rings.
Did you have a good time?
Oh, I had a great time. Yeah.
Okay.
It was nice to get some warmer weather, but apparently you guys got that as well.
It was a little toasty here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a little toasty here. So
summer's already over though, so we had a couple days.
We're right back to winter. Maura, I know you had a weird story on the way back from the East Coast, so we'll do that coming up at 6:45 this morning because it is. You wrote this to us yesterday, and it's distracted me ever since. Heather and I spent about 15 minutes talking about it last night.
I'm glad because I'm like, this is really weird, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, sometimes you need that confirmation.
I want some
I thought
details.
It was, but yeah.
Yeah, we're going to need the full details, so we'll do that at 6:45 when we have a little time. Justin and I were over at the ball game yesterday along with. Well, really, everybody, actually. It was kind of fun. It was a little 7-10 outing over to the ball game. And, you know, when the Mariners play like that, they're fun. They're good. Like, I mean, when they hit the ball and do a whole bunch of, guys on base, put the
little
game in motion.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it really was a fun baseball game to watch and be a part of when your team is scoring every inning or two. You know, it keeps the fans engaged, et cetera. And it was, remarkable to see how you don't need a parade of home runs and walks. It is possible to win games by doing all sorts of other things. I know the bunt has fallen out of favor. I understand why. And I know Haggerty wasn't bunting specifically to move runners over. But with a couple of guys on, Sam Haggerty showed you don't have to try to just, you know, home run or strike out. There's other options.
The pitch, he shows bunt, lays down a beauty on the third base side, charging Araruz. Bare hands and one out throw to first, and it gets on by Mancini down the right field line. Toro will score. Around to third goes Frazier. Off with the ball is Odor. He gets the throw back in, winding up on it. Second is Haggerty.
It's like guys aren't ready for anything like that anymore, right? Because they're just expecting, well, he's either going to strike out or try to hit a fly ball. God forbid anybody do anything. Oh, my God, he's bunting? Well, what do I do? Better throw the ball away.
Oh, you were, I don't think you were there for first pitch, but the game started that way. Cedric Mullins just dropping a bunt. You're going to shift me? Cool, I'll bunt.
Well, Cedric Mullins can play by
bunting might be the thing that you call for most just below a brawl.
Me? I'm not a big... No, it's funny, though. I'm not a nonstop bunting guy. It's more... It's more about two things. One, variety. It's just looking for variety in the game. You know what I'm actually calling for is contact. Just more contact in the game so that not everything is a strikeout or a walk or a home run. And the bunt comes up as a part of it, not because I'm an old man who thinks that it's the best way to win games.
Right.
But just, you know, the second part is more about where you can find value in the game. And one thing I found myself thinking about with Sam Haggerty yesterday, who went 3 for 3, he hit the ball hard once and went 3 for 3 in the game. He bunted for a base hit. He hit the ball hard down the third baseline, which bounced off the bag for a double. And he hit a little, you know, flare into left field. Those were his three base hits on the day. And I found myself thinking about what Mike Cameron was complaining about a couple of weeks ago, and Aaron Goldsmith kind of went after him. They went back and forth, which was great, about, you know, how much time we spend looking at how hard every ball was hit. And, you know, is that a useful evaluative tool? Because, yes, the guys who hit the ball the hardest are the best players in baseball. If you're looking at average exit velo, you know, it's the best players in baseball. It's Aaron Judge and Soto and Trout and all the best guys in the game. But does that mean that if everyone is looking for velo in terms of exit velocity, that there is value to be found in a type of hitter who doesn't always hit the ball hard, but has a knack for putting the ball into play at the right spot? An Ichiro Suzuki, a Willie McGee, you can probably go through a million names like that, of guys that have been successful in the game doing it a different way. Would nobody want Ichiro now? Man, I don't want him. Sorry, I didn't hit the ball hard enough. I can't imagine
that.
Well, I think a nameless, faceless Ichiro would have difficulty, well, obviously at his current age, but even at the time he was coming into the league, might have some difficulty breaking in because you would have to look beyond some of that. Now, obviously, his on-base percentage skills were so high that I'm sure Ichiro would have been just fine.
Yeah.
But I wonder if there is value to be found in guys who put the ball in play, don't always hit the ball hard, but have a knack for putting the ball in the right place. And Sam Haggerty just made me think about it yesterday.
Oh, and by the way, once they're on base, they are very fast.
Well, that's for sure, too.
Quick.
Yeah, he is. And you got a chance to see it. I mean, like him scampering in for the double, that's just straight speed. That's a single that he turned into a double by being fast. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, that's another good point. And all the ways you can pressurize an opponent. And Brock and I were talking about it yesterday, sort of the, you know, Scott Service idea and Jerry Dipoto idea of being hard to play against. Yes, sometimes that means hitting home runs in big spots. And oh, by the way, they hit an absolutely titanic mammoth blast yesterday. It's not like they don't have that skill. But the other ways that you can, you know, make the game, put it in motion and put pressure on the other team and force them to make a mistake. You know, it's interesting. Baltimore played a tremendous defensive series, except when they didn't. Do you know what I mean?
We were talking about that. It's like either a web gem or they booted it.
They made 3 or 4 spectacular plays in a 3-game series. Between Mullins and Austin Davis, is that his name, the right fielder? Austin something. Oh, he's excellent. Both those guys, really good players. Austin Hayes. Austin Hayes and Cedric Mullins. Between them, they probably made 3 or 4 just spectacular plays. Nevin made a couple of great plays at third base. You put it all together, and you're like, man, what a great team. Well, Then you lay down a bunt and they throw it away and you do something else and two outfielders collide. When you find a way to put the ball into play more often, you're just giving yourself more opportunities. So I promise I'm not sitting here, you know, reminiscing and lamenting the days before sabermetrics ruined the game. I don't think that. I'm pro sabermetric and stats and everything else. But I also think that there are ways to look for value when entire groups of teams are looking at one thing. Maybe you can find people with a different set of skills that's not being valued and look for ways to win that way. So it certainly worked yesterday. Mariners with a nice win, and all of a sudden they've won a couple of series in a row again. Right now, all of a sudden, it's three series in a row after coming back and winning these two games against Baltimore. So Oakland's in town for four. You got an opportunity to really do some damage. You're not that far out of it. In fact, when I tell you some of the wild card numbers, you may be a little surprised. I'll do that along with everything else you need to know next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, don't look now, but the Mariners have now won 7 of 10, and they've gotten themselves back within 5.5 games of the final wild card spot. How about that? They're now tied with the Angels, so their run differential sits exactly at 0, meaning they've scored exactly as many runs as they've given up on the year, and all that comes courtesy of a resounding 9-3 win over Baltimore that had a little bit of everything. Bunt base hits, swinging bunt base hits, balls bouncing off bases, and thankfully one mammoth blast.
Best be ready, and the 2-1 pitch. DeJulio, swing and a well-hit ball. Deep to left center field. Going and going in. A bird deck. Goodbye, baseball. Holy smokes, and a mile by Julio Rodriguez with his 12th home run of the season.
I would say he got all of that one. Upper deck in the left center field area that you just don't see a lot of balls go there. I know Rick said it, but he's absolutely right. Aaron had a good call on TV. We were there in person, and it was loud. The sound of that bat making contact with the ball, Julio was special, and Scott Servais spoke about that after the game very specifically.
Julio Rodriguez, it's it is. We got a lot of fun ahead of us here. I think the whole organization, Seattle fan base, everything. This guy is some kind of special. We're watching it play out before our eyes, and, you know, that's a long ways to hit a home run in this ballpark. You don't see it too often. He's been right on everything all series.
He has, and if you just see what he does to a lineup when he is starting to click on all cylinders. Meanwhile, Chris Flexen went 6. Sam Haggerty showed that getting on base and pressuring the opponent can be done without hitting the ball over 100 miles an hour every time. And Jesse Winker, how about this story? He just continues to hit. Two more base hits for Winker. He's now raised his OPS to 696. Anybody want to guess what the major league average is for OPS in 2022? 706.
Oh.
Yeah, it's down. In the past, it's been closer to 750. This year, it's 706, and his OPS is 696. So after the god-awful start he got off to just over the last month, he's turned himself into roughly an average major league hitter, and now he has the rest of the year to get himself back to where Jesse Winker himself should be. Anyone want to bet that he finishes pretty far north of average? I'm guessing he will. Oakland in town for four starting tonight, so another chance to make some hay against a team on pace to lose well over 100 games. Logan Gilbert, Adrian Martinez in the opener. Meanwhile, a couple roster moves yesterday before the game. Taylor Trammell headed to the injured list. Team brought up Haggerty and Marcus Wilson. Sent Kevin Padlo back to Tacoma.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, try to follow along here. Day three of the Deshaun Watson hearings in front of former federal judge Sue Robinson, but some interesting info started to leak out yesterday. So the AP had a report suggesting the league might accept a suspension in the range of 6 to 8 games rather than appeal anything that is under the full league year or the year that the league had requested. The headline obviously looks bad for the league, because 6 to 8 games would be pathetic. And Goodell obviously is, you know, in the middle of all this. But let me try to help explain the process a little bit, and maybe this makes sense. First of all, Goodell's got the ultimate say. So if there's an appeal of her decision by either side, including if it's the NFL who appeals, it goes to Roger Goodell, and he can impose whatever discipline he wants. So it's sort of ridiculous.
That makes sense.
It's a sham process. The only way he can't have final say, though, is if she decides there should be no suspension, and so leaking that they would accept 6 to 8 games might be sort of a way to make sure she gives them something, so that Goodell can then do whatever he wants, enhance it on appeal. Finally, my personal opinion here is that Goodell's trying to make the hardliners like me happy. Because I want 2+ years. And my guess is if they leak 6 to 8 weeks, which is obviously a pathetically small number, and he ends up coming in off the top rope and enhancing it and making it a year, I'm supposed to be like, well, look at the great job Goodell did. She only wanted 6 to 8 games, and he got her all the way up to a year. It should be 2 years. Trevor Bauer got 2 years. That should absolutely be the standard that is now set for a case like this, and anything less than that I think would be weak.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Hey, what are you doing October 3rd? You made plans yet? You're interested in watching an NBA preseason game at Climate Pledge Arena? You can. Blazers, Clippers going to be there, so it's an option for you. A couple thoughts on this one. One, it's nice for fans. Two, it's yet another reminder that the NBA will return as soon as it's ready to expand. But three, it's kind of sad. It makes me a little bit sad. It's supposed to be the other way around. Like, when I was a kid, the Celtics used to do this. They'd go around to some of, like, the satellite cities around Boston. They'd play a game in Hartford or a game in Providence, Rhode Island, or something like that. You know, cities that are a couple hours away, but not nearly, you know, not the hub. Portland doesn't do this to us. We do this to Portland. Like, it just sort of bugs me out.
Yeah.
Legal action, by the way, seems to be the theme of the week. How about this crazy story involving Freddie Freeman, his agent, and Doug Gottlieb? Freeman fired his agent after he left Atlanta to go to L.A. this offseason. Okay. It sounds like after a series back in Atlanta, Freeman got a little upset, and there have been some rumors that the agent, Casey Close, overplayed his leverage with the Braves, and eventually they moved on, traded for Matt Olson, and at that point, Freeman was out of luck, and so he went to L.A. He got a higher salary in L.A., but the take-home pay is smaller because a lot of it's deferred and because of the high taxes in California. So Doug Gottlieb yesterday tweets that Close never showed the offer to Freeman. And now Close is threatening legal action against Doug Gottlieb. See where it goes. But yeah.
So he hid the offer.
That's what Doug Gottlieb is alleging. That he never gave him the final offer because he wanted the higher number rather than the offer that would make his client the most happy.
And expected him to never find out? Ugh. That smells bad.
There you go. But we don't know if it's true. He is saying it's not true, obviously, and that he's going to sue Doug Gottlieb over the whole thing. So we'll see what happens. That's everything you need to know.
Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah, right? All sorts of crazy, weird legal stories and all this stuff today between Goodell, and that's not even getting to Dan Snyder and, you know, his testimony. Maura, you missed all kinds of good stuff. You know who was in the news that I know you, for some reason, I always associate this person with you? Terry McLaurin. You see, he finally signed his big deal.
He was one
deal.
Of my fantasy football favorites.
I know. He's I think of him as your guy. Like,
yeah.
He's kind of
I would
your
say
guy.
For fantasy football, he is. Unfortunately, he doesn't have any quarterbacks that can throw him the ball. He does what he does, which is impressive, with not much.
But you're always kind of sticking up for him. Like, whenever I'm like, oh, you know, you got Debo and this guy and DK and that guy, and you're like, hey, don't forget Terry McLaurin.
Well, like, you're usually like, who's that?
Yeah,
I'm like,
forget.
He's one of the better receivers from that class, too.
Well, he certainly got paid $23.5 million a year. So the time is.
Well, they're paying Carson Wentz $30 million, so you can't really.
Well, that's because Daniel Snyder's outside on his yacht. He's outside the country, and you know everyone's run amok while he's gone, apparently. He can't make it back to
can't be bothered to his court.
To a congressional subpoena.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. All right. We'll come right back and chat with our guy, Jeff Pass, and get his take on. You know, it's funny. For everything and as close as we've been to the brawl on Sunday and all the reasons why it happened, who was at fault, Jeff's opinion is so much broader and in some ways kind of smacked me across the face yesterday. You'll hear it next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Jeff Passan joins me now as he does weekly. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I am doing great, Michael. How are you?
I'm great. It's been a heck of a week so far. I mean, anytime you get the kind of brawl that we saw on Sunday, you got content for days. What did you make of the whole thing?
You know, I'm conflicted when I see something like that because, like, the animalistic part of me, the part that likes chaos and, you know, likes passion and likes seeing crazy things happen was what I... I call it like the Beavis part of me, because I feel like Beavis and Butthead, and I'm just sitting there like, fire, you know, like you want to see the world burn sometimes. But then you see Archie Bradley get hurt. Then you see Jesse Winker out for 7 games and Julio Rodriguez out in the middle of this Mariners lineup that can't score already, just getting decimated by suspensions. And then you see the stupidity around the whole thing, and it's like, you know, why? Like, why does it have to be this way? It's just, you know, the whole thing's not necessary, but I think there is frustration in both of these organizations that they both feel like they should be better teams than they are, and whether that precipitated this in any way overtly, I don't know, but, you know, pardon me playing armchair psychologist here, I think there's been frustration that's just been boiling over in both places this year. And my goodness, did it ever boil over.
So that's interesting. I love sort of the bigger, broader view, because honestly, when you're in the middle of it, you're too busy sort of sorting out the whodunit part of it, right? Who's at fault, et cetera.
Right, right.
But what do you think, if you're in the Mariners' shoes, what are you supposed to do in that point? You know, Nevin has brought out an opener. He's thrown at one guy's head, and now he's hit another guy. How else are you supposed to handle it at that point?
I mean, if I'm trying to be the parent in this situation, right? It's like my kids are fighting. And in this scenario, thankfully, nobody from the Angels got hurt in that initial round. And whatever the intent was, you know, whatever the intent may have been, the answer is, if you're Jesse Winker, you walk to first base. Phil Nevin has a well-earned reputation inside of the game as being someone who's going to instigate, right? And what are we taught to do? We're taught to walk away from people who are instigating. We're taught to, I mean, considering where Jesse Winker got hit, he literally could have turned his cheek. He chose not to. And I'm not sitting here saying this entire thing is Jesse Winker's fault, but if you want to avoid something like that, then the Mariners need to say explicitly before the game, we're getting thrown at today, and if it's done the right way and, you know, thrown behind Julio Rodriguez's head, not the right way, hitting Jesse Winker on the butt is the right way. If it's done the right way, let's let that be the end of it and let it be squashed there.
But, yeah, you know, it's interesting. I feel like if they had just thrown at Julio, they might have let it be, but you don't get a second chance at it. And honestly, and I'll blame the umpires here, I think Winker was not, he didn't go charge the mound. It wasn't a, hey, whatever, we're going round. He's standing there waiting for the umpire to throw out the pitcher and the manager. And when that doesn't happen, right, he gets chirped at, and they're like, hey, get your butt down to first base. And then it's on. It's kind of a weird start to a brawl.
Yeah, and by the way, this was an actual brawl.
Oh, yeah.
I said it on Baseball Tonight this weekend. Most of these baseball fights are tea parties. No, this was a kegger. Like, they were going at it. And I have to say, Anthony Rendon coming out with the left-handed palm strike is one of my favorite moments of the year, when he's got a cast on his right hand. and you know, JP coming over the top with forearm shivers. And then the slow-motion shot of Raisel Iglesias seeding the lawn. Like, it was just a beautiful, beautiful thing. Hey, this was a brawl where there were some of those moments that are completely unforgettable.
You mentioned Nevin's reputation. Tell me a little bit more about Phil Nevin. I've heard some stories over the last few days, but what is his reputation in the game?
I mean, he never doesn't have something to say. And listen, in some scenarios, that's really good. He's a very passionate guy, and that passion, I think, has taken him to the place where, you know, he was a big-time prospect coming up and had a decent big league career, never was great, but he's been on coaching staffs, including Aaron Boone's in New York. He's been in big-time situations, and he's getting his shot now as manager after Joe Maddon was fired. And I think that this is a little different than Rob Thompson in Philadelphia. He's been more of a stabilizer. Bill Nevin's tried to be more of a catalyst. And, you know, we're going to come together by any means possible. And if one of those means is getting into a situation where a guy in Andrew Wants, who was a starter in the minor leagues but has been exclusively a reliever in the big leagues, gets brought in as an opener to essentially be a goon, I mean, that's what we were looking at here, right? I think that says something about not just your managerial philosophy, but your philosophy about baseball. And that is, you know, the morals that are used today around baseball, trying to get fighting out of the game, that does not apply to Phil Mammon.
Yeah.
He clearly believes in baseball justice, and he went seeking it.
And Mike, he got
10 games. Like, that is not an insignificant suspension.
No.
You normally see managers get a couple of games. You do not see them get 10 games.
What's the best fight you've ever seen?
Oh, Padres-Braves back in the 80s. You got to look that thing up. Have you ever seen it before?
I don't know. I don't know whether I have. In the 80s? No, I mean, I know fights in the 80s were real fights.
Yeah, no. This one spilled into the stands. It had multiple different incarnations. I think there were like 20 people ejected. You know, you got 80s mustaches going on. I think Pascual Perez was in the middle of it. Just go look up on YouTube Padres Braves Brawl, and you will be enthralled for 10 minutes.
Sounds good.
It's not just the best brawl ever. It's numbers 1, 2, and 3 on the list.
What is
that far in my mind ahead of all the others?
Best moment in a brawl, though, is it Kyle Farnsworth taking down Paul Wilson?
No, it's Nolan Ryan giving Robin Ventura noogies.
I think I'd go with Farnsworth. I love the Farnsworth one. I think I've probably watched that on YouTube 100 times.
What about Coco Crisp charging mound and like doing the Matrix stuff?
I remember that. Yeah, that's a funny one.
Yeah, were you in Boston then?
I think
that might be a little bit before your time.
No, I was there when Coco got there. It might have been after I left though. I don't know. I don't remember. Yeah. I don't remember if I was there for that or not. I remember watching.
Sure it was against the Rays.
Well, there were a bunch against the Rays. I remember Trot Nixon throwing his bat at, I want to say, Ryan Roop. He did one of those things, like Roop kept hitting him and he wasn't sure what to do. So he did the thing where it was like he swung, but he let go of the bat on his swing. So it went out to the pitcher's mound. That's kind of an underrated move.
There was an Alcantara, I'm forgetting.
Izzy Alcantara.
Name in
yes.
the minor. Yeah, Izzy Alcantara in the minor leagues. Do you remember what he did? I think he did like a mule kick to the catcher. And after mule kicking the catcher, charged the mound. He may have had the bat in his hand. I don't know if I'm conflating these, but the mule kick to the catcher is always a-plus move.
Some actual baseball conversation, not just fighting, before we move on. You mentioned Winker. He's actually finally starting to hit the ball. Do you think the real Jesse Winker is still in there?
Yeah, I do. And I'm not sure that the Jesse Winker the Mariners thought that they were getting, you know, the guy who had the best splits against left-handers in the game over the last few years, you know, right up there with Bryce Harper, is going to show up because, I mean, that guy is elite of elite. We just haven't seen that to this point. Let me ask you a question. You have a better sense for this than me. What is the feeling around Seattle about Jesse Winker? Because he is clearly a divisive personality. I mean, they hate him in New York. You know, flipping the double bird to the crowd in Anaheim, like there's a lot going on there.
Good question.
Mariners fans, have they glommed onto that, or are they like, dude, go hit and then you can be the tough guy?
Well, I think both, and it's funny, we started off part of the show today talking about that, because when Winker first arrived, the first impression of him, I don't know if you've ever met him, is that he is a really sort of fun-loving, affable, a little bit offbeat kind of a guy. Right. He walked over to my radio desk and was just like, hey, can I jump on? And we just like, and he's weird and kind of fun and funny. But yeah, at the same time, you've got, you know, and the thing with the Mets fan seems more tongue in cheek kind of fun
playful.
Than it
yeah,
does. Yeah, it's
totally playful. I appreciate anyone who will go up against fan bases. I do.
But let's also be clear, Jeff. He was the first one out of the dugout when the Mariners kind of beefed with the Astros a couple weeks ago. He's the one who was in the middle of all of this, and it led me to a startling conclusion, which is that he might not just be one thing. He might be an actual complex human being.
I mean, shocking conclusion to draw, Mike. That these people are people.
Yes. He's not just a movie character. He's an actual human.
This is why you get the big bucks into this.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I came up with. But I think he is, and he does seem to have a bit of a fire starter kind of personality, and it's made us wonder whether it took him some time to really get comfortable here and to be embraced by his teammates, et cetera. And I wonder if the last week or two has helped. I don't think it's hurt that, especially when he comes up with a big game-winning double last night.
Exactly. I think it's one of those things where this is a Mariners organization, especially when Mitch Haniger is out, that craves leadership. And I think J.P. Crawford fills that vacuum. I think Julio Rodriguez, in the long run, is going to be that guy. He's got it in him. I think he wants that. But you need a red ass on your team. I mean, that's an old baseball term right there, and Jesse Winker embodies that. If the Mariners are going to go down this year, they're going to go down fighting. They're going to go down swinging. It's not going to be passive. And I think Jesse Winker taking the tack that he did illustrates that this team still has, quite literally and figuratively as well, some fight in it.
Some texts. I love Winker. I love Winker. Best Mariner acquisition in a long time. He's a legend now. We love Wink. He got a standing ovation on Monday. Frick yeah, Mike. I would die for Jesse Winker. So there you go. There's your answer.
I mean, that tells you right there. All fans want is to see passion, right?
Yeah, like, but also fans, you got to be good too. You got to be good too.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Okay, it's the two P's. It's passion and it's production. And if you can marry the two, that's when you're a legend. If you're just the guy who's going out and starting fights, that's not what you want to be known for. You want to be known as the guy who hits the game-winning double and goes and starts fights. You don't want to be the guy who starts fights and then can't back it up.
Good stuff. Jeff, thank you as always. Good conversation. We'll do it next week.
Looking forward to it, Mike.
All right, weekly conversation with the great Jeff Passan, who has turned himself into the biggest name in baseball reporting, and it's pretty sweet what he's done. He does a great job, and I just love my conversations with him every Wednesday at 7:30. We'll replay Thursday morning at 6:30 as well.
I followed up and looked into that fight that he mentioned, by the way.
Yeah.
Padres Braves. That's a good one.
Yeah, you know what? I totally forgot to go look at it yesterday. The 3 hours I fell asleep after the game may have been part of the problem. Sure. I kind of ran out of some time, but that is on my docket.
There's a 21-minute YouTube video of the fight.
Wow.
It's good.
Yeah, the individual moments from fights are a lot of what you remember. I do remember the Izzy Alcantara mule kick. I mean, he got suspended for a while because he sticks his cleat directly into the dude's chest. Mm-hmm. But it is, I mean, while it's dirty, it is smart, right? If you really want to get to the pitcher.
Buy yourself some time.
Right. I mean, most guys get caught by the catcher. So if you just take care of that guy immediately, you've got a clear, clear path.
Yeah.
You just have to worry about either the first or third baseman coming bombing over and taking you out from the side. Yeah.
Anyway, like how much you've thought this through.
I've thought this through a lot more. We've spent a lot of time while you were gone talking about the fight, et cetera, and Jesse Winker becomes such a huge character in this whole thing. And, we talked about it there with Jeff. Thank God he's finally hitting, because if you start to put all of that together with his personality. What did Ty France tell us yesterday? He's one of the best teammates he's ever been around.
And you asked if he was feisty.
Yeah. And he's like, no, I wouldn't say feisty. He's one of the best teammates I've been around. And he certainly is a guy who's got his guys back. So I don't know. It is. It takes time for a team to come together. It takes time to figure out who the leader is. And I talked about this a little bit with Brock yesterday in the podcast. Look, I know that, talking about Kyle Seager's gotten me into some trouble in the past. I'll kind of go against some things I've said before. While I firmly believe that quite frankly, they've gotten an upgrade on the field this year from Suarez. What was Brandon telling me yesterday? That Suarez's WAR right now for the year,
oh, I don't know,
is already higher than Seeker's was last year for the whole year. Right. And that's a cumulative stat, right? You can continue to build it over the course of the season. So, you know, they've gotten some pretty good offense out of third base. But I do wonder if they've missed some of the veteran leadership that Kyle Seager brought, whether it was my style of leadership or not. It was the guy that they turned to. It was the guy that sort of made it all work. They kind of made fun of him, right? Sort of the dad stuff because he was older than a lot of the other guys. They're missing that. And maybe Jesse Winker over time will start to fill some of that role. J.P. Crawford is one way of doing it, but it doesn't mean it's the only way of doing it. And they've been without Mitch Haniger. They've been without Tom Murphy. And Seager, you know, was let go. So it we'll see what happens and how that develops here over the next couple of weeks post-fight as guys tend to come together.
I was telling you guys, I leave for a week, and what a difference. Like, the frustration was mounting with Winker, mm-hmm. and now he's like a hero.
He is. He did get a huge ovation when he returned. By the way, kind of a Seattle ovation. I don't like to criticize fans. I mean, I do, but I try not to. It was nice to hear everybody cheer for Winker when he came back on Monday. Standing ovation is not what I would call that. It was an ovation with a few people standing.
Okay, it was a rousing ovation.
It was a good cheer with a few people standing up. I would have liked to have seen, and I wasn't there that night, I would have liked to have seen sort of more people rising to their feet to express their gratitude to Mr. Winker. That's just me, not criticizing folks that didn't. But you should have stood up and you should have cheered for Jesse Winker. So if you did that, that's
him,
on
but...
you. I'm not criticizing you, but you did it wrong.
But you did it wrong.
I just want you to know.
It was still good. It was louder than normal. It was good.
It was. But there should have been more people standing up. I'm just saying.
Okay.
So, Maura, you come home yesterday. You fly back. Did you fly direct? What was the flight schedule yesterday?
I stopped in Chicago, okay. O'Hare. Not bad for like an hour. Hour and a half, something like that.
And was this on your flight to Chicago or your flight to Seattle?
This was my flight to Seattle.
Okay, so Chicago to Seattle.
Four-hour flight.
You're sitting kind of in the back? Middle?
Middle, yeah.
Okay. Not a full flight?
No, they were saying it was pretty full because they were telling people they couldn't bring their carry-ons, but somehow I ended up in a row with no one next to me, which is the best.
The
I had the window seat and two open seats next to me.
Dream scenario.
Yes.
You on the ABC or the DEF side of the plane? I want to make sure we understand.
I was in C-Day.
ABC. Okay, so you're in C-Day, and you have the entire row to yourself.
Yes.
And then what happens?
So about half hour into the flight, this lady comes over and sits down in the aisle seat and says,
describe the lady. What are we talking about? Age, height, what was the impression you got from her?
Hard to tell. I would have thought maybe like around 40.
Okay.
Just short brown hair.
Okay.
She was wearing maybe kind of like, pants that like seem like you might go hiking in them or something, and then she was in her socks.
So maybe
she had
crunchy.
Her shoes off already.
Kind of crunchy, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe right. A little granola.
So she's not your grandmother.
All right. Yeah, but sort of like a 40-year-old crunchy woman, and she comes over and she says,
she asked if anyone was sitting there, and I said no, go for it. There's still a seat in between us, like that's fine. I don't know if she was crunched in the middle somewhere or something.
Okay.
But I'm reading my book. I had a glass of wine. I'm just, you know, relaxing. And next thing I know, she, like, puts all of her stuff in the middle. Her coat is, like, half in my seat.
Mm.
And then she proceeds to lean back, use her coat as a pillow, and the middle headrest as the base, and lay down. So this stranger's head is practically in my lap when I just had a whole row to myself. And I'm like, wait, I thought I was kind of being nice, being like, yeah, go ahead, sit there, because this isn't your seat. Like,
right.
I could complain.
Sure.
I wasn't going to do that, but like, I don't think that you laid down unless you're sitting with someone you know, like your family or friend.
Yeah, that's pretty... that's pretty forward.
Or you're by yourself.
I would say, yeah. So just so I understand. So you're sitting in A, you're reading, you're having a glass of wine, everything's fine, you've been in the air for a little bit, and this woman comes over, 40 years old, kind of crunchy, and she's like, hey, can I sit in seat C? And you're like, of course, no problem. Mm-hmm. She then throws all of her stuff in seat B, but is careless about it enough so that the sleeve of her jacket is flapping around and it's in your seat now. Mm-hmm. And then she lays down with her head on the seat rest between A and B?
Yes.
That's insane.
That is so nuts.
That is absolutely deranged
behavior. And
then behavior.
She couldn't stay still. So she would do that for a few minutes. And then she would get up. She had a book. She was standing at the end of the aisle reading her book in the aisle in her socks for like half the flight. And then she would try to lay down again for a few minutes and that wouldn't work. So back and forth with her head almost in my lap. And then she would get up again.
Where did she finish the flight? Like, where did she land? Was she land?
She stayed in the aisle seat when we finally had to, like, stay in our seats.
She tried to talk to you? Did she try to, like, engage in conversation at that point?
Well, I pretty much stayed glued to my book because I knew I didn't want any part of that.
I don't blame you. I would say...
I was like, this is not normal behavior.
That's deranged. That really is deranged.
It wasn't like she was, like, having a tough time. She wasn't, like, super hungover.
Well, I started to think that, like, maybe she's got, like, some kind of... back problems or something. She's trying to get comfortable because at one point then she also sat in the seat backwards. She put her knees on the seat and was facing and was facing the seat.
Yeah, full psychopath behavior.
So I was like, maybe she's got some like health issues going on. She's really uncomfortable. I don't know, but it was. But I still don't think you lay down practically in a stranger's lap when it's not even your row.
Maura, I feel like you might have buried the lead. She sat backwards chair.
She tried that. Another thing she tried for like a minute and then she moved again.
You know what I bet happened? You know what I've been thinking about? You know what might have happened? Maybe she took some sort of a, what's the anti-anxiety people take? Starts with an X. Xanax?
Xanax.
Maybe she took a Xanax and had something to drink. Because that can kind of lead to like
losing
crazy,
your shoes and standing and sleeping
like
in somebody
like
else's
fugue
lap
behavior, right? Where you don't even know what you've done, right? They're adamant. Like if you get Xanax, they're like, whatever you do, no alcohol because you will lose your mind. I've got to imagine that that's what happened here because I can't come up with any other excuse for that kind of behavior.
Did you make eye contact with anybody who was doing the like? Are you seeing what I'm seeing? Do I say anything?
I felt like people thought maybe like I was with her or something. Oh. Like no one else seemed to like think it was this.
Yeah.
That's terrible. I'm sorry. Maura, it's good to have you back. Thank God you're here. All right, coming up next, the first couple of months of this Mariners season has certainly had a lot of frustration. But when you watch a game like yesterday and you see the team hit on all cylinders, it's pretty easy to let your mind wander. It's next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.